I'm Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to a promoted podcast from Tech Central. I'm in Randburg today to talk to Alex Russell, joint MD of Apptronics, a 100% subsidiary of Ioco Technology. We're going to be chatting about the concept of the intelligent workspace and what this means for the end user experience and end user productivity inside organizations. Alex, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for your time.
Cheers, thank you.
So Apptronics is a partner of Citrix, and they recently put out an interesting report called The Evolution of the Citrix Workplace. Before we get to that, let's start with a definition. What is the intelligent workspace, and why is it important?
So the intelligent workspace is defined by a concept which is built around how users engage with their applications and data in the most productive and engaged manner. The intelligent workspace is aware of the contextually aware of a user's needs at that point in time. So if a user is requiring to access a application, the intelligent workspace is about driving them to executing on activities and actions rather than having to log into an application and from the application identify with the application using hopefully a login credential that they've remembered, and then to find which browser they would need to log into the application from, which is quite a tedious process.
And it's the way most organizations work today.
Many organizations are built on the foundations of what end-user computing has been delivering for many years, and there needs to be a change because the workforce has changed tremendously.
So what's driving that demand for change? What are some of the key factors?
So I think if we're talking from the user standpoint, if I'm a user of end-user computing services in an organization, I'm managing or measuring the organization's ability to deliver on my needs by my user experience. And the user experience that I have and I'm used to is most certainly consumer-like. So I don't need a manual to understand how an application works. Mm-hmm. I have an application that is amplified on a mobile device or a device which is easy to get the application installed and doesn't require such strenuous security perimeters, but is secure by design. And I'm looking to interface with the organization's data in a way that makes me the most productive with regards to what I need to do when I need to do it.
Because in the past, it was really the IT department that decided, you know, we'll create these apps, these silos, if you like. Mm-hmm. And it was almost a top-down sort of approach to IT within the organization, whereas the approach here seems to be putting the end user first and deciding what would work best for them in their workflows rather than an IT manager or some central department saying, well, you need this functionality, you need these apps, use them. It's rather having a conversation with the end user and finding out what it is that would make them more productive.
Correct. So having the visibility from an IT point of view, so you ask a question from the user perspective and I'm saying, well, let's understand it from IT's perspective. Organizations nowadays, from an IT point of view, are really hoodwinked by the fact that they just don't know what that end-user experience score actually is. Mm. They look at stale metrics, which is how many calls are being logged on the help desk, what are the outages, and they don't have a sense of actually what the user's experiencing at the endpoint. So when we talk about user experiencing, we're talking about what is the user's performance at that point in time. Is there an issue around application complexity that is stopping the user from executing a process? Is the user not able to get onto the network? Is the network latency that high that the user just cannot perform a task? And often users are at the point, you know, where they don't give that feedback to the organization. Mm. They will measure their experience and base the experience on the last available experience. And if that was great, they have an expectation that it'd be great all the time. If it was poor, unfortunately, sometimes they expect the performance to be poor. And you've got all these SLAs saying everything's green, I'm at 999s of availability, but yet that end user is still having a poor performance. And organizations need to understand a lot more about what's happening at the endpoint to be able to understand where the optimizations can be done from a user perspective.
And how do you determine what's happening at the endpoint? Is it about conversations with those actual end users, or are there processes you can put in place to actually measure the sort of thing without having those conversations?
Well, I think it starts with tooling. And if there's a tool for anything you want done in this industry, I tell you, you can see many organizations who have probably 7 or 8 typical tools that are looking to measure performance, provide insights. But it really starts from a tooling perspective. And it's about giving you insights in real time as to what is happening on the endpoint. So end-user computing analytics is an extremely important part of understanding what the current experience is for the user. Because any changes you make in that end-user environment, you need to have a benchmark from which you can say, well, I've benchmarked the user experience right now. Any changes in that workspace, I need to measure how that has impacted the user positively or not. And many organizations just don't have that. They will go roll out a new financial application, and just based on the mere fact that the user is using a application which is not legacy, is almost a determination that the user is having a better experience, but not in many cases that happens.
I mentioned a bit earlier the report from Citrix, the evolution of the Citrix workplace, and I thought there were some really interesting findings in that report. It said that, among other things, 60% of executives say their employees have trouble getting the information they need for their jobs when they need it, and 44% of employees want their enterprise apps to perform more like consumer apps, which I thought was very interesting. And then this stat, for 80% of all business applications, employees use just 4 or 5 key functions. Are we able to quantify what sort of negative impact this is having on productivity in the workplace? And how do you go about quantifying the improvements that you might see through an intelligent workspace project that you might embark on?
So productivity is somewhat a subjective matter in many measurement metrics of whether a user is doing more with less, and whether organizations' systems and enterprise systems that they're rolling out are actually benefiting the organization and the user. But if we just look at the behavior of users and we start to understand, users are looking to do a piece of work outside of the normal 8 to 5 hours. They are looking to do a piece of work that is flexible within their schedule and at any location. So the mundane way of having to drive into the office, perform a piece of work, and leave the office is definitely a legacy requirement. But if you look at how users are starting to interface and expectation of interfacing with corporate systems, with this consumer-grade type technology that users are accustomed to, applications are becoming more about giving that bit of information to the user at that point in time, and not to give them this entire window which now the user has to go and sift through to try and understand what it is that they need to do. If you take your typical day, I most certainly am searching probably 25 to 30% of my day for something that I need to do. I'm searching for a document, I'm searching for that email, I'm searching for that version of the document that I either sent or saved in some location, or I'm then moving to a secondary cloud-based system to go and search for a document which I potentially think was there. So this explosion of ability for users to access applications, save data wherever, has created the searchability, made its searchability extremely difficult. So if you just take that in terms of the way you would normally behave on a day-to-day basis, you know, the challenges are that productivity is being marginalized on the fact that users can't get to the right data at the right time for the tasks that they need to complete.
And very often the information is sitting in disparate systems all over the place. And I know in big corporations that that employees often end up firing up their own instances of applications in the cloud or wherever it happens to be, that the IT department sometimes isn't even aware of. So it must be quite difficult and quite challenging for an organization who's going to embark on a project like this to actually figure out what's going on inside their company and how to bring all those, these disparate sources of information together and then determine what needs to be served up when and why and how.
Absolutely. You know, the biggest challenge for many organizations is this shadow cloud, right, or shadow data repositories that are out there. And, you know, we look at all the GDPR requirements and compliance and risk and governance pressures that are part of many industries. Is you need to understand, you need to be in effective control of what data you have about customers and where this data is residing and how you're actually using it. So security needs to be built in. And I think unless you understand from an analytics perspective how things are behaving before you actually move to a change, it's going to be very difficult for you to ensure that you plug those holes in the future.
Is it possible?
It is possible. It's possible by taking a pragmatic approach to it and not trying to boil the ocean, so to speak.
Right.
And by understanding the analytics at the end point, it will start to unearth where those pressing issues are. For argument's sake, it may be that you have disparate data on non-secure platforms, which are cloud-based, and users are using their own password-generated, using their own password-generated information to actually store corporate data. I mean, you just think of the accessibility of data on file shares that are only accessible via a VPN in an environment, whereas a user will actually take that file and move it to a cloud-based service provider with no security authentication or minimum-grade security and authentication, and be able to share that through many other channels in a very unsecure manner. So it most certainly is possible, but it's a pragmatic approach that you need to be taking.
So I imagine there'd have to be has to be a lot of end-user education involved in any sort of project like this to explain to employees what it is you're trying to do and explaining why they need to do things in certain ways in order for a project like this to be successful.
Yeah, change management is a really important part of this, and most certainly when you're changing the way a user is doing things, you need to ensure that from a change management perspective, they're absolutely empowered to understand why it is that they're doing what they're doing, because that will ensure that project adoption actually happens and the organization receives a return for this change in the way that they're delivering applications to a user.
So Google has made the internet universally useful. It's as simple as typing a search query into a box to getting just about any information that humanity's ever generated, created. Is there any reason we can't make it that easy for employees to find what they need for their jobs?
I think you can. And I think if we take a different approach to understanding what applications actually are. So applications are, let's break them into two units. We've got applications, which are a bunch of actions, and we've got applications, which are insights. Now, if we look at some other definitions, which are pretty common to this consumer-like grade application subset, you know, we've got feeds, right? So that's relevant information that's been sent to the user. We've got notifications, which are based on the user's profile. It's presented to them in a particular way. We have insight, which is more the intelligence around stuff that you're not subscribed to, but would probably be important based on what your interests are. You look at actions, which are initiated activities, which says you need to approve an expense claim. That would be an action. Micro-apps. Micro-apps are about taking subsets of bits of an application and giving that to the user. So let's take the example of a user's expense claim. The user is, all they're looking to do is to understand who the user is, the date and time, upload the expense claim, and assign it to an expense. They don't need to go through the entire HR portal to understand, first of all, where the this application submission is. And taking that information and streaming it, just that bit of information down to the user, will create that consumer-grade experience. And then tasks. Tasks are specific for that user and the individual that they need to execute. So if you take the searchability and the fluidness of what Google, in your example, has brought to the universe and to technology, the consumers are almost reaching out for some type of experience that they can get from their organization with the same type of applications or similar applications that they're accessing on the web or on their PC.
So if you're an organization and you're looking to improve your productivity, embark on a project of this nature, where do you start? Should you be doing it in small bite-sized chunks? Is it something you should be approaching as an amorphous whole? What's the best practice advice that you could give to companies who are thinking about doing this, and where should they start?
So assessing the application landscape is probably the first part.
Okay.
One wants to understand what applications are being accessed, how often they've been accessed, where they're being accessed from, how long a user is spending in those applications, and the performance of those applications.
And there are tools you can use to do this? You don't have to go and talk to each end user?
No, you don't need to talk to end users to be able to do that, because, as I said, end users will give you a very subjective view of the matter, and it will be dependent on whether they're having to log this call through the help desk or whether they've just never had a great experience anyway. So understand that that application landscape is the fundamental point that you would start in understanding where that departure point is for doing something different at the end user space.
Okay. So much happens in corporate email. I think it's the bane of many people's lives, in fact. But we've seen apps like Slack and Microsoft Teams trying to deal with the email nightmare. But email still remains for most companies, and it's for many people, it's the center of their daily workflows. Is, in your view, email broken? And should we be looking for an alternative to it? And is an alternative actually possible?
Well, I think email, there's still a place for email, because the challenge with many organizations is that collaboration is not as pervasive from a digital perspective as it is to the human element, where we all get into a room and we have to be in this room to collaborate around someone showing us a document or telling us about something that's going on. As soon as the organization moves to this digital collaboration, you're going to see organizations start to embrace a far more pragmatic way in which collaboration can happen more pervasively. And this digital dexterity starts to become a lot more embedded in the culture of an organization, because this dexterity that exists is because organizations at the top level or macro level have been slow to moving a lot of their processes into a digitized format. And with that slowness, and their applications are also not digitized. So it's kind of many swimming lanes that need to be moving at the same time. But email will still have a place. But I think the organization's reliance or user's reliance on email to get the task done or to be told to do something because I haven't received an email is most certainly changing significantly with the tooling like Slack, like Microsoft Teams, and other enterprise content tools available in the market.
I want to talk about millennials a bit later, because I know they have an aversion to email, and I think that'll be a fun conversation. But you decide to embark on an intelligent workspace project. What solutions, first of all, in broad terms, does Citrix bring to the table? And what are some of the pitfalls people should be aware of as they're setting out on this journey?
So from a Citrix perspective, the intelligent workspace is a bouquet of products, tools, and solutions that drive a change in the way that organizations move to delivering apps and data to the user. But what is the premise of this intelligence workspace is it's a platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's a platform that augments the applications, that the organization is looking to get to the user. But it's not just the applications that the organization is delivering to the user. It's the applications that the user needs in order to perform their task. So if you can see it as a platform by which we're providing the connectivity of all corporate systems and data into a single pane of glass that allows a user to interface seamlessly into these systems in a very secure manner with security built in. I think that's probably the most frustrating part for many users. You've got multiple systems you need to access. You're not always sure around your identity of those, and many organizations are really behind on the identity and access management. The single sign-on capability is not there. The fluidness of the user's interface into those systems and those applications is not there. So Citrix is a bouquet of products and solutions that allow for parts of this intelligent workspace to be built up like Lego blocks. So, you know, if you've got a box of these different Lego pieces, you know, your ability to still build a car out of the various blocks is most certainly built into the technology. It's not that specific car with those specific training wheels, with that specific dashboard that's going to get you from A to B. It can be pieces and bits of these different Lego blocks.
And you choose those Lego blocks as you're ready for them.
Absolutely. You know, it's not a one-size-fits-all, most certainly. And we always say, don't boil the ocean. You don't need to do that.
Yeah. And you, I'm guessing you don't just rush out and buy the technology, assuming it's going to solve all your problems. You need to think first about exactly what it is you want to do, how you're going to manage that change within your organization, and then figure out how those technology solutions fit into what you're trying to achieve, rather than just going out there and buying this product and saying, well, this is going to solve all my problems.
Absolutely. It's not a off-the-shelf product. And I think if organization looking for a silver bullet, it's not a silver bullet. Most certainly the approach that we would take with customers is to look at a systematic way in which we would engage with them to get them to better understand that end-user workspace. So from identity and access management to the application landscape, to the end user experience, wrapping that into a way in which we can take the organization forward in a very pragmatic way. Because sometimes you start to find those pain points which the organization presented you with aren't actually the pain points, because it's not the user pain point. It might be an IT pain point, but changing an IT pain point is not going to have that exponential benefit that the organization seeks. They're looking for return on investment organizations, and that is at the user vote.
Yeah, yeah. So they have to figure out what those end user pain points are first, and I guess many organizations actually don't know what they are.
Correct, correct.
Who should be leading a project like this? I presume you'd want one executive responsible for overseeing such a project. Where should that executive sit? Is it the role of the CIO, or is it someone else within the organization?
So most certainly executive support is definitely needed. Where we're finding different types of executives is not your traditional executive. Your traditional executive, where you're selling traditional IT projects to, seems to always be the technical person, or the technologist, so to speak. We're finding the interest in the intelligent workspace is about the other executives within the board that are more around changing the way of work. You know, that's your human resource and people officer.
Right.
Who are really, and you mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, talent. You know, how does this talk to talent and millennials? Well, the millennials are part of our workplace right now. And there's the next gen Y or Z, I'm not too sure what that is, but they most certainly are looking for a completely different experience. And in fact, the other day I was in an interview and I had a millennial actually ask me, what was our policy around remote working? Right? And how easy is it for me to be able to do what I want to do? It's one thing to say to an employee or potential employee, yeah, we support you working for remotely, But if it's cumbersome and clunky, it's going to be really, really challenging for you to be able to achieve that with the individual.
And let's you've brought it up again, so let's chat about the new workforce, if I can call them that. These are what they, I suppose they term them, digital natives, people who've grown up with technology, with smartphones and social media apps, etc. And they typically don't use email. Are they demanding something entirely different from employers? And what does it mean that these so-called digital natives are coming into the workspace, and what impact are they going to have? Are perhaps these the people who are going to actually drive some of the change that we're talking about here today?
Absolutely. You look at the type of individuals you're looking to employ. These individuals are built in a, they're born in the digital world. If it's not on a mobile device, it's going to be very difficult for them to, one, use that app or even consume that app. And once they consume it, if it is clunky, if it is not user, it doesn't talk to me as a user and is not consensical in terms of the way the application works, the user's not going to use it. And they're going to find every reason why they don't want to use it. And they're going to find alternative solutions to what it is. So I absolutely believe that if you're looking to employ for the future, you need to be employing for what your users are looking to do within that workspace, not what you're trying to shove down their throat, because that's just the way we did it. If you do that, you're going to struggle to find talented individuals who actually want to be with you as an organization. And the beauty about that as well is the youth, those millennials, they amplify the discussion around its ability to change their lives in a positive manner, and also they use all social platforms to tell people when they're very dissatisfied. And they don't really mind with that telling their employee that they're dissatisfied on a social platform, because they believe, well, that's how we communicate. So it is going to be challenging for organizations if they don't change the way that they deliver apps and data to users.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about talent retention and talent acquisition for that matter. How systems could affect, and I don't think people really think about this.
Yeah.
But especially in a white-collar environment where people are at their desks working on computers all day, the experience you get from that computer, from the information systems you're using, has an impact on the quality of your work experience, I suppose. And you make a good point. It could end up driving people away.
Well, we're going through quite a change in our organization, and it's around the new workspace that we're creating for our people. So we're going through a consolidation of real estate, and we're piloting a way in which we're changing this whole cubicle office that many of us have been accustomed to when we're working. You know, you come, this is your desk, that's your drawer, this is your cubicle, and there you go, get on with your work and enjoy it. We're moving to this, no one has a workspace, no office doors, no offices, so to speak, and creating these behavioral zones where users, based on the behavioral zone, are engaging in a particular manner. So we'll have a quiet behavioral zone. If you're in that zone, you are looking to be left alone. You've got some really deep thinking that you need to be doing. If you're in the collaborative zone, you're all game. So, expect participation, expect engagement that is needed. And I think workplace or workspace design, as well as workplace design, are merging absolutely a lot closer than people expect. And organizations would most certainly achieve a hell of a lot more by embracing these two dynamics in a very cognitive way.
I believe organizations are starting to look beyond SLAs or service level agreements to XLAs, I believe that stands for experience level agreements. Yes. What does this mean, and how do you measure it? And is it about looking at things more from the user perspective rather than a top-down perspective driven by the IT department?
I think it is. You know, the industry has been plagued with the nine nines of availability, and the challenge for organizations who are contracting service providers, the nine nines of availability are always, it's always green. But yet the noise in the system in the organization tells you something differently. You know, networks are saying networks are fine, servers fine, database guys, everything's fine, but yet there's still this noise in the system. And these SLAs for many organizations are almost gates, you know, gates to ensure that they can get paid to deliver get paid for the service that they're delivering. When you're moving to XLAs, what you're doing is you're changing the game. You're changing the way you're, as a service provider, looking to be measured. And it drives a more deliberate, persistent way in which you're engaging with an organization to really improve the CSI component to the way users are experiencing the services, but that you're also driving transformation. And there's those two initiatives are extremely closely married to the way in which organizations look to contract service providers. But you cannot do that without understanding what's happening on the endpoint. Mm. You cannot do that without understanding what's happening on the network and then correlating those two to drive a better experience for the user.
Many South African companies, in fact, not just South African companies, companies around the world are embarking on major cloud computing projects. And they, as part of that, those projects, they're looking at whole digital transformation projects. How does the move to cloud impact on all of this? Should companies be looking at this as part of their cloud efforts and as part of their digital transformation projects?
Absolutely. The ability for the intelligent workspace to accelerate cloud initiatives for many organizations is a key benefit of it.
They go hand in hand.
They do, absolutely, because what you're doing is you're changing the way in which applications are delivered and consumed. So if applications aren't installed on the endpoint and aren't packaged on the endpoint anymore, they would most certainly be better suited to be delivered in a cloud, one of the hyperscalers, and then accessed via a browser or a user interface in this intelligent workspace, which drives a far more elusive way in which services are being delivered.
Alex, before I let you go, customers are on this journey to the intelligent workspace. What conversations are you having with South African corporates today about this sort of thing?
I think where it's starting for us is organizations are most certainly looking to move the least complex applications into the cloud. And they're looking to adopt services which are cloud-like so that they can almost bridge the gap to the digitization of applications, systems, and processes in their business. And we're seeing our customers say, how is it that we can change the way the user experiences the services that we as the organization are delivering to them? And if you can change the way and measure that in a tangible manner that drives a wow experience for the user, we're interested in what you have to offer.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. Alex Russell is Joint MD of Aptronyx. Thank you so much for your time and talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you, Duncan.